My name is Mike Gibb, and I run AccountsRecovery.net. I'm excited to bring you today's webinar on a topic that is very near and very dear to my heart, and that is growth. During a webinar I held last week, a panel of experts talked about how morale and the outlook for and within the arm industry have improved in recent years, and many in the industry are now at the point where they're looking at this as a time of expansion and growth. And we're lucky to have a couple of experts with us who have helped grow collection agencies who will be sharing their insights. This webinar is being generously sponsored by VOAPS. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about my platform, that is AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the arm industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, including the Daily Digest email newsletter and the Getting to Know profile every week, as well as hosts webinars like this and delivers information across a multitude of communication channels. For example, you can check out our new podcast. We've launched three of those in the last 2 months with a few more on the horizon. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Nick Jarman is the Chief Operating Officer of Credit Collection Partners and owner of Right Away Consulting and Coaching. He recently served a 3-year term on the board of directors for ACA International and is the past president of the Missouri Collectors Association. Nick has also been recognized by ACA International with the International Fellowship of Certified Collection Executives. Harry Strausser is currently a freelance speaker and consultant within the arm industry. He's a second-generation collection professional and held the position of president of 2 successful collection firms until they were sold in May 2017. He is president of his own educational and consulting enterprise, Interact Training and Development, is active in the Mid-Atlantic Collectors Association, where he currently serves as president, and within ACA International, in which he is a senior certified trainer. He also served on the ACA International Executive Committee and held the position of president in 2004 and 2005. Unfortunately, Jeremy Felder could not make it with us today. So we're lucky to have Nick and Harry. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. A recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. And with that, let's start our discussion. Let's set the table first, and Nick, I'll give you the first question. Let's talk about why now might be a good time for an agency to consider growing.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mike, for hosting this. Thanks, VOAP, for sponsoring this, and everybody for attending. That was a great question because I'm not sure that there isn't a time in general when it's important to focus on the growth of your business, especially from a collection agency standpoint. Having been fortunate enough to do this for the last couple decades, the one thing that's been consistent in growing collection operations has been inconsistency. And we work in a pretty fluid and volatile environment when it comes to just differentiators, whether it be regulations, client requirements, compliance, and things of that nature. So I think that any time is a good time to think about the growth of your agency. But specific to now, we see the decreased regulatory burdens that are being in place, that are getting signed into law, rules that are getting rolled back. We've seen delayed of impending rules where we thought doom was going to happen years ago. And so also lending and service providing is expanding, which means that the cutback that lenders and providers had in the past is now at a greater need. So it's just a great opportunity and time. All the stars are kind of in alignment. And now is as good a time as any to focus on growing your agency.
Thanks. Appreciate the opening salvo. Harry, is that something you'd agree with? It's always sort of a good time, or is there anything in particular going on now within the arm industry that might make this a little better time for agencies to be really spending more of their energy and focus on growing?
Well, I would have to completely concur with Nick in that it's always a good time to think about growth. And I think the reason we need to always be thinking about growing and moving forward is that, you know, it's the cycle of sales where it's the one you're working on, the client that you're servicing, and the client that you just lost. It's a cycle, and we're seeing a lot of agencies being pretty negatively impacted by loss of business because of dynamics in industries like the medical industry, where large medical conglomerates are buying out all of the small and regional hospitals. We've also got a lot of condensing going on in the third-party collection agency industry. So you've got small operators that are just shutting down. You've got mid-sized companies acquiring small ones and large companies acquiring mid-sized ones. And so I think it's a good time to think about growing your company. I know later in the program we'll talk about different options for doing so. And the other dynamic too is that 10, 15 years ago, it was a very robust industry, lots of people entering. 20 years ago, consistently, companies every month were starting up new operations, and that dynamic has just about ceased over the last 7 or 8 years. Very few new startups. So there's opportunities. If you're in the game, if you know what you're doing, I think it's a great opportunity to grow.
Excellent. Sorry, I was just catching up on my notes. Harry, let's come back to you. You know, obviously, you and Nick are pro growth, which is great. But there are sort of pros and cons. You know, if you're an agency executive and you're looking at making a push and trying to scale up, maybe you want, can you spend a couple of minutes talking about maybe sort of what some of the pros and cons might be?
Yeah, well, I think certainly one pro is that business in this industry has become very difficult for the small operator because of the cost factors, as Nick already mentioned, you know, the compliance endeavors that we engage in on a regular basis, what it takes to operate a compliant, technologically savvy organization today. It's tougher for the small operators. And I'm talking about these folks, and we've got lots of them, that have 8, 10, 12, 15, 20 employees. It's difficult. So increasing your size hopefully increases our revenues. It increases our ability to perhaps accommodate some of the compliance standards and technological standards, data security standards that are required today. I think when you're growing, another plus is that as you capture a larger market share, whether that be a larger market share in a region or a larger market share in some type of vertical in the industry, whether it be medical or retail or utility collections, you have a bigger presence. I think your name becomes a little bit more well known, and that notoriety can bring you business. From a con, you know, if you're going to grow your organization, then you have to be ready. And I like what Nick said in the first response about inconsistency. There's a lot of companies that say, I want to grow, but they're not ready to do it. They haven't thought it out. They haven't researched it. They don't have a real clear plan. So because it requires more skill development, you know, enhanced compliance, perhaps new areas of compliance because you're operating in a new vertical, training, education for your staff has to be engaging and robust. And the other con is that, you know, with the regulatory environment that we're in right now, as you get bigger and your numbers get larger, and you know, you're just more of a target. There's more opportunity for things to go wrong when you have 10 million accounts in your system versus 500,000 as a smaller agency. So you've got to be ready for that growth.
Interesting. Nick, let me circle back to you. Do you have any other pros or cons that you'd like to add to the list that Harry started in terms of things that, you know, agency activities should be thinking of?
Absolutely. And I think just to circle back real quick to the first topic, when I think both when we're kind of speaking about growth, or that growth in my mind, and I think Harry would attest to it, just kind of means moving forward. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're growing leaps and bounds, and that you're going from 20, 40, 60% increases in revenue or things of that nature. So I think kind of to define growth, it's important that we look at it from that standpoint, and that we look at it from incrementally, are we moving forward and growing, and then also applying strategic growth to that.
One brick at a time.
Absolutely. And some opportunities, I mean, Harry mentioned a great point, which is the sales cycle. The sales cycle used to be pretty long 10, 15 years ago. Now it's even longer. So you could sign a contract and it could be 6 months or a year before you see placements. You just don't really know what to expect and then what you may lose in the interim. But as far as the pros, I think that personally, especially as owners or leaderships of companies, you get to employ more individuals. So that's always satisfying. When you're growing, you get the opportunity to diversify your portfolio. Also maybe different stages of collections, whether you're looking at servicing first party and third party, to kind of help offset and make sure you don't have too many eggs in one basket. That increased opportunity comes with increased revenue. So we all are for-profit entities. So we do want to make money. That's essential to what we're doing and to staying in business. And then we also get to play a larger role in the importance of what we have, which is a credit-based economy. And then as far as the cons, I think the cons to that could be growing too fast. Sometimes you're not prepared and you take on projects that you need a little bit more time to get up-staffed and up-trained for. The cost of growth, are you prepared to invest in the areas that you want to go into? So there may be a new vertical that you want to get into, but you don't necessarily have a full understanding of what that cost of entry, the cost of compliance may be, or how quickly you may get a return on that investment. And then lastly, from a con perspective, is just making sure that you have the right people in the right places. And when you do that, if you don't have the right people in the right places in the right positions, then it ultimately can, falter.
Great, thanks. At this point, I'd like to pause the discussion and introduce Todd Santa Maria from BoApps to say a few words. Todd?
Thank you, Mike, for letting us sponsor this webinar today. Nick and Harry are two of the most knowledgeable and generous teachers in the industry today, and we lucked out being able to bring this their years of insights to the listeners. So thank you to you both. Today we're talking about how to grow your company given the current combination of the favorable regulatory environment and the explosion of new technologies that improve the way agencies do business. It's always been our main goal at BoApps to help our clients do just that with our patented direct drop voicemail service. We're just one piece of the overall growth formula, but our clients efficiently increase their number of contacts to mobile consumers without interrupting them with the call in the middle of their busy days, empowering those consumers to call into the call center on their own time with resolution on their minds. We get reports of more pleasant conversations and improved agent morale all the time. With our service, our clients have vastly increased inbound calls, multiplied their dollars collected, and raised liquidation rates. And when they can prove that success, they earn more business from their existing clients, they sell more new clients, and they give themselves opportunity to branch out into new areas of business. We've been supporting the ARM industry since 2010, and we've always developed our technology for this group listening today. Every new feature that we add is built with our clients' safety and compliance as the main concern, and we'll continue to do so. We pride ourselves on being helpful consultants, working with our agency clients to develop strategies for growth, which is why we're excited to learn some new tips from Harry and Nick today. So thanks again for the opportunity, Mike.
Excellent. Thanks, Todd. Appreciate the words and appreciate the sponsorship. Let's get back to our discussion. Let's start tackling the different ways we can grow. And Harry, I'll ask you, there's sort of simplify it down into two ways. You can grow organically. You can grow via acquisition. Do you sort of have a preference, or maybe share some thoughts on what you think might be a better option at this stage in where we are?
Yeah, sure. You know, organic growth is difficult, and I think one of the things that we might want to outline to our group today is that when we're responding to some of these questions, there are dramatic differences in agencies that are smaller, under 20 staff, and some of the mid-sized and larger players. What I can tell you, a lot of my perspectives are from being a certified trainer with ACA and having my own training company for 30 years. I've had opportunities to sit in rooms with people who run agencies, thousands of them over the years, and listen to their laments. And one of the interesting laments in many average-sized companies is that growing organically is difficult. Nick aptly mentioned, you know, that sales cycle is longer. It is difficult to find good salespeople. And when you think of the majority of our industry has these average-sized companies with 20 or less employees, loads of companies out there with, you know, 8 to 12 employees, they find this is one of their biggest laments, the sales cycle and growing organically and trying to reach out and to get into new markets is not an easy task. And so it tends to be a big weakness. I do believe my preference today, and you know, I chose when I decided to sell my firm to literally sell it and merge in with another organization that was interested in growing through acquisition. I think that there are tremendous opportunities out there today to grow through acquisition. You've got tiny companies being absorbed by ones that are a little bit bigger, and you know, mid-sized companies buying up companies that are in the 25 to 30 staff member range. You've got big entities growing by acquiring mid-sized companies. So it's kind of a pecking order that you see. I think the unfortunate issue, though, we have with so many of our potential listeners today and so many of our industry players is that the M&A firms, some of the great firms that are out there that represent our industry well, are not really interested in the smaller deals. And I'm talking about under $1 million. Most of them aren't interested under $3 to $5 million. But I mean, when you get into there's a lot of agencies that are doing $600,000, $700,000, $800,000 a year in business, $1 million a year in sales and revenues. Wonderful opportunities, but they don't have the coaching that they require, and it becomes a very personal issue. So finding those companies and getting them willing to talk and open up about the fact that they want to sell is the difficulty. So I'm a big proponent of growing through acquisition, and I think that we will continue to find that there will be many, many opportunities arising as we move forward.
Nick, would you agree with that?
I would, and you know, having had the opportunity to help and grow a company organically back in 2009, that was definitely one of the highlights of my career, just from a satisfaction standpoint, but it was also the most difficult time as well. And so I think that, you know, 9 years ago is a lot different than the landscape that we face today. So, you know, by all means, if somebody and we see some companies that are out there that, and they're very, you mentioned the entry to market is very minimal, but if somebody's out there and they have a differentiator or something that they think they can apply to the market that's not already in place, then by all means, they should take a look at what it would take to come in and organically grow it. But the acquisition standpoint, especially in today's climate, is not only probably the smartest, but it's the most beneficial as well, especially if you're looking to expand into different verticals. So, you know, if you have, let's say you're primarily a financially services-driven agency, and in you're small, but you have a good footprint, but you want to get into where the majority of debt is, which would be in the medical space, but you don't have any experience, you could look at one of those smaller firms, like Harry mentioned, and look at acquiring them to not just go in and increase the revenue stream, but to also expand your portfolio of now having experienced management and workers that know what they're doing. So the acquisition at our current landscape and environment, in my opinion, I concur with Harry, absolutely.
Do you see the same problem maybe with the smaller agencies, you know, being hard to identify? And if you do, do you have any ideas or tips about how, if you're looking to acquire that kind of agency, how you would go about finding them? Or if you're on the other side and you're looking to sell, how to go about getting yourself noticed?
So I think that as far as identifying them is always the most difficult part. And, you know, when Harry talks about the NA firm and, you know, retaining those, I mean, if you're a smaller company and you're looking to grow, you might not be able to afford the retainer that it may cost to get somebody from an M&A firm to go out and investigate what might be a good fit. So what I would recommend is just from the identification standpoint would be to really stay active and involved in your local, state, regional, and national association, especially from the regional and the state levels, because that is where a lot of these deals end up that I've found from experience, at least transpire through just building the network, understanding who's doing what, understanding the marketplace and knowing what's out there. And so having the ability to build that infrastructure and build that network, I've seen so many friends and colleagues of mine that have acquired other companies, have been a part of it. And it just started off as a casual conversation. And then before you know it, they find out that the owner was trying to get out and they end up getting a great deal. And then before you know it, they have X percent more revenue coming in. So from that standpoint, I think that's the best way to go about identifying it.
I can imagine, Harry, being, you know, president of Mid-Atlantic Collectors Association, that you'll also be a strong advocate for taking that route in terms of identifying potential targets. Is that correct?
No, absolutely. And I've seen several deals in our unit footprint, very much like Nick is saying. Get out there and network. Let it be known. Talk to people and say, we're in a growth mode. We're really looking to acquire some good agencies. You don't need to be real big. And, you know, I think what happens is you've got a tiny agency doing $250,000 a year, okay, $20,000 a month. Well, that may fall below the radar for many, but if you've got a company, you're doing $2 million a year in fee and you can have a 10, 12, 15% increase in your volume by acquiring a company that hopefully, you know, has some good client relationships, it's a win. But you've got to be able to talk. And I believe it's very relationship oriented. When you know someone and they trust you and they're more apt to open up to you and say, yeah, I really, you know, the face in the industry is that, boy, they're going gangbusters and they can't wait to grow their business, behind the scenes and saying, God, I wish I was out. I wish I could get out. I wish I could sell. But they don't want to admit that. So it's very much relationship oriented.
Let's talk a couple of sort of chicken and the egg scenarios. And Nick, I'll throw this one out to you first. You know, if you're a collection agency, is it better to build the infrastructure first before seeking out more clients, or is it better to go out and get the clients first and then build the infrastructure?
Well, I think the answer is rather simple, and that is if you want to keep the clients, then you'll make sure you have the infrastructure first. That's just my opinion there. But yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, being able to be prepared, planned, and prepped to not just serve the clients that you're attempting to get, but also, you know, be in a position to do well for them, because the expectations from all clients across the board have continued to grow exponentially. So there's not really a lot of time to honeymoon period, so to speak, to figure out if that relationship is really going to work or not. You really have to be able to come in and execute right away. They may give you a dependent upon the type of client, and of course we could go on about that, but in general you may have a 2 or 3 month grace period if you're lucky, and then you're going to be expected to come in and contribute, you know, with those same players that have been in their business for doing it for, you know, quite a long time. And so, you know, you have to be able to have that infrastructure, not just from an infrastructure standpoint, talking technologically, compliance and things of that nature, but also financially, because one of the things that I'm seeing more often over the years is that one thing that a lot of agencies aren't taking into consideration, the client remit period. And when I say that, I'm talking about when you're dealing with clients that either are gross or net, and you're dealing with the gross client. So you're collecting all of the money, you're sending it to them, and then in X period of time, they're sending you back what you earned out of there. And that period seems to have gotten longer. And so while you may have clients that wait a day or 2 days, you may have ones that wait 2 weeks or a month. I've even seen very large clients, very well-known clients, that have a 90-day waiting period on their remits. And so you have to be financially stable enough to, one, know that, but be able to carry over all of those funds initially while you're trying to build up. That can really become costly if you don't expect it.
Very interesting and insightful comment. But let me follow up just to sort of flesh something out. If you're saying sort of infrastructure first, and certainly, you know, what you talked about with the financial aspect is definitely something to keep in mind. What else? I mean, how many, you know, how do I know how many staff I need to hire, or how much, you know, how many more licenses I need to acquire on my software? How do you kind of sort of plan for that without really necessarily knowing how many new clients might be coming in the door?
Well, the first thing is you do is you call Harry and hire him and use his wisdom. at least what I would do. But, you know, I think that's always a broad question. From an infrastructure standpoint, absolutely, you need to have you should already have if you're in collection, but to have a collection system that not just is operational, but has the ability to grow with you as you continue to grow. Your telephony system, your omni-level communication channels, such as VoApps or other types of options, text messaging options, email options, your letters, being able to make sure that you're able to communicate. But from that standpoint, that all should be taken care of. And then the personnel standpoint is always the most difficult, because that's our largest expense as an agency and an organization is payroll. And so I think you really take each case individually, and I don't think there's a cookie cut answer for it. I think you really try to get as much information as you can from the client that you're courting or what you're expecting from your sales placements, and do your best to be up and running and prepared when that comes in. But I mean, you're not going to be able to be in a position. Most companies are not able to carry dead weight payroll for a month, let alone months on end, without having that revenue come in. So I think you really have to apply a fine-tooth comb to iron those things out.
Mike, I would definitely agree with Nick in his commentary on this. I think what often happens too, it's not that agencies are, you know, out there pounding the streets looking for that big deal, planning to get that new big deal. Sometimes it just happens suddenly. You know, it could be a windfall or it could be a nightmare. We're all excited when you hear that you've just landed a client that could increase your business by 40%, but that could be one of the biggest nightmares you've ever had. And to address what Nick said relative to remittances, you know, I have directly seen, and I've heard the laments in my training programs of people who landed this mega client, and it was 90 days. So when they collected in January, and they, you know, they billed at the end of the month, they weren't getting paid till April. And it was a killer because of the up ramping of the staffing and the expense involved with that. So if you're not ready, there's been a lot of failures relative to this type of growth. So it's got to be well thought out. Not that you're going to say no to the sudden opportunity that arises, but you better be at least thoughtfully putting a pencil to what you can and can't do. And sometimes the better decision is to walk away from a new potential big contract if all the dynamics aren't in line because it could do you more damage than good.
And Mike, just to kind of,
yeah, go ahead, Trader. Go ahead, Nick.
I was just going to make one point in there just to kind of summarize that too in a statement is that kind of like the reputation or when you're dealing with that cycle that it's extremely difficult to get a new client, as anybody that's done it can attest to. It is much easier to lose a client than it is to get one. And so keeping that in mind, that's where a lot of the onus should be on how do I not just get this client, but how can I also sustain this client and make sure that we're performing at the levels that they need to while complying as
well.
That's
a great point.
So Harry, circling back to something you said, you know, we're talking about growth and here you are saying, well, maybe, you know, you've got to know when to walk away from a potential deal that could make your agency bigger. How do you make that determination?
Well, I think that most of us hopefully have a good, I just got all choked up thinking about that. Emotional topic that you mentioned there, my history of my business. But you know, I think most of us have a pretty clear understanding of our operations. I hope we do, that we know what the flow is. We know what the business is that's coming through the door. You know what your account volumes are. You know what your staffing is. So you've got to have the ability to look at that new deal from a practical business standpoint and not from the emotional standpoint. Because most of us, we're excited to get this new opportunity. And so I think that you have to take the step back and gather your resources internally and the thoughtful management level people that you have and the frontline people that do the work and decide, can we accommodate a 40% increase in accounts coming through our door? How much time do we have to ramp up? What is the anticipated cost of that? Ask what the remittance culture is of that client. You know, these are important things to ask up front. You know, do they indeed pay within 7 to 14 days of your remittances? Are they gross or are they net? You know, what will be the financial hit that you'll have? I've heard lots of stories sold in my told in my programs that definitely accounted for people that said, man, I should have walked away. So take the emotion out of it. You know, you got to put a level intellectual head to it and put it on paper to make that right decision.
Sorry for making you all verklempt there. I want to circle back to the original question, though, in terms of build infrastructure versus go get the clients first. Are you more on the build the infrastructure out first side?
Absolutely. Because if you don't, if you're not building the infrastructure and you're not ready, it could be a disaster. And that's what happens when people do not have the infrastructure built and they suddenly get this massive client. And what will happen is, and Nick's right on, you know, it is so hard to land a big client, but you can lose it real easily by not performing. And then, you know, it's not just the possible financial loss, but it's a reputational loss too. You know, if you really blow it and with a substantial client in a particular vertical, that word gets around. So there's multiple reasons why you need to make the right decision and why you need to have that infrastructure prepared.
Okay, good. Let's take the discussion in a different direction for a little bit. We've talked about growth either via acquisition or organic growth by adding new clients. We've talked about, you know, if you're going to go out and add more clients, is it better to build the infrastructure out first or we'll get the clients? But another way, at least I think, and you know, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, and we'll just sit here quietly for a few minutes. But another way I think that other, you know, agencies can grow instead of just by looking to add more clients is by expanding the products and services they offer. And I know there have been a number of discussions I've heard at trade shows recently and webinars like this one, where especially in the healthcare space, agencies are looking at adding more of sort of revenue cycle functions instead of just, you know, being a collection agency as a means of competing with some of those growing healthcare companies that you referred to earlier, Harry. So There are other ways that an agency can grow. So let's talk a little bit about that. Harry, let's get your insight first. Should it be one or the other, where I look to add more clients and keep my services that I'm offering, or should I, you know, be looking at expanding my services to the current customer base?
I would recommend a combination of the two. You know, you don't want to just dive into all new products and services and kind of leave your bread and butter services behind. I think it makes sense. And let's just back up a second. You know, I think in general, our industry, we are no longer, you know, the third party bad debt collection industry. You know, we are accounts receivable management firms. That's why we refer to ourselves as the ARM industry. It is about managing the accounts receivable flow. And so you're absolutely correct that, you know, there, particularly in the medical space, most of my close friends and colleagues that have really grown and held on to their medical business are moving upstream. They're working extended business office types of models, self-pays of day one, where their volumes are incredibly high. Now, their rate structure, obviously, commensurately goes down the further you move up. But in some cases, you know, we've already talked, I think, at length about how hard it is to get a new client into the mix, you know, adding more clients. It's always been said that, you know, it's easier to sell a current client on a new service than it is to go out and sell a non-client on joining your organization. And, you know, to use kind of a parallel example, for about 23 years, I've been co-owner of a retail floral shop in here. We had about four shops at one time. And, you know, one of the big mantras in that industry is to upsell your current customers. So when they order a bouquet, ask them on a card to go with it. How about a Mylar balloon? And are you familiar with that? We have chocolate-covered strawberries on sale today. So they were going to pay $25, end up spending $40. And so I think that this idea of upselling your current clients to say, well, what, you know, what else can we do for you? And I know we, in my firm over the years, we were always kind of known as a creative company. We had a, what I'd like to refer to as a consultative approach with our clients. We were not a dumping ground for their accounts. We got to know them and interact with them and share their troubles and help them create a very proactive ideas and programs that will help them get out of the ruts that they were in. And so they really turned to us as that consultative approach.
Nick, are you a big proponent of upselling chocolate-covered strawberries as well?
Absolutely. My wife is as well, so happy wife, happy life. But you know, Harry's right. I mean, everywhere you go, not even just in our industry, but everybody's upselling. You know, do you want fries with that? Do you want those chocolate-covered strawberries? You know, it's kind of a natural habit in business now to upsell. So, you know, personally, I think that you know, the question, going back to the original question of, you know, looking at adding more clients, I think that's probably the most realistic and more likely option of happening to grow sooner than maybe the opportunity to you know, to actually go out and acquire a company or that process. And when it comes to really the best references that you can have, there's not a better reference that you can have in this industry than a satisfied client. And I know of a company in particular that this year have been around for 25 years, and they've grown into one of the largest agencies in the country. And it wasn't until, I think, 2 years ago, maybe, that they actually installed a salesperson for the first time. And they allowed their performance and their clients to talk to one another, to network together, and they use their clients and their performance to speak rather than a salesperson. And so, you know, that just goes to show that, you know, it can be done, and it's a great reference. But I think that adding the clients, when going back to that conversation of the infrastructure, I think when the infrastructure is ready and in place, it is critical to make sure that you try to diversify some of your offerings. So we can go with the mindset that a debt is a debt. We can collect on the debt, regardless of it being medical, financial services. They all have their nuances, but at the end of the day, it's still relevant. And if you're in place, you know, diversify, offer the same service, but in a different vertical. Or if you want to get into the billing or coding or different types of stuff that's out there, and you have some people or experts that are in those subjects, then you can do that as well. And then lastly, on that topic that I have, I 100% agree with Harry on the consultant type approach. And it's very, very important, especially with all of the different dynamics that we deal with from an industry standpoint, both from the client and the agency perspective, is that we build partnerships and that we work with one another. And when we address kind of the remit period and how long before remits come into place, you know, some of that stuff can be negotiated. And sometimes they're just a line drawn in the sand. But it's important to make sure that that's just one little example, but build partnerships. What's going to be successful, long-lasting, sustaining partnerships? And if it's not going to be that way, or you don't get that warm and fuzzy, then sometimes you have to walk away. And that's okay as well, because at the end of the day, you don't want to try to be everything to everybody. That's just a proven way to ultimately find yourself you know, in a bad predicament.
So it's an interesting point. Let me try and sort of follow up and maybe nail down a couple, if possible, try and nail down some particulars, because, you know, Harry was talking about being known as a creative company, which is, I think, is a really great, you know, culture and a really great identity to have. But then you're also right in that, you know, you don't want to be everything to everybody. So how do you manage sort of being both without, you know, kind of hurting yourself?
I think that you can be deliberately different in how you're approaching a situation. So, you know, Harry can have company A and I have company B, and we're offering the same service. We're just, Harry believes in the omni level communications with the different communications of direct drops and text messaging and email letters that have a great solid strategy, artificial intelligence. And I may be just on the side that says, telephone and letters. But, you know, so he's being deliberately different in his approach. And so, you know, just when I say not being everything to everybody, that if you don't understand the market or the product, and there's a lot of nuances that go into it, or you're not prepared or adequately staffed, or you can't be, or you're not resourced, then don't just jump in for the sake of jumping in, because you're going to get a better shot at another opportunity down the road by walking away and doing it the right way, making sure that it was understood that, look, this, you know, at the time was not a good fit. We didn't want to waste your time or waste ours. And sometimes it's very difficult to do, but if you just take it on for the sake of taking it on and knowing that you're not prepared, going back later and trying to get that opportunity from that specific client is going to be difficult. And, you know, we have clients that speak to each other all the time, and there's a lot of relationships and networking that goes on. So that information will spread. And so it's not just impacting one individual client, but really a network of clients at the same time.
Harry, was that something you had to kind of reconcile, you know, sort of being known as a creative company, but not being sort of the company that offers everything to everybody and spreading yourself too thin?
Yeah, absolutely. There were even times where they would call us in, and I would serve as a resource for them to find what they need. So it doesn't mean that we were losing a contract, but there might be part of a service they need that we don't do, and they'll say, "Do you know someone who does this?" And we would be able to put them together with a firm that is effective in that area. Now, there's a risk there, because if you're referring them, you better refer the right people. But I just want to also underscore what Nick was saying, that I think having the right conversations in honesty, you know, he mentioned about the dilemma with the remittances. You know, if it's going to be hurtful to you to have to wait 60 days, have that conversation. a lot of conversations when we talk about this topic have surrounded rate. You know, what is your commission rate? And you've got, you know, 80% of the pot each month going to the client, and the agency might be lucky to get 20%. And the client decides, you know what, we need to make a little bit more money, increase the revenue, so we're going to reduce your fee by 2%. You know, we're going to go down to 18%. If you want to play, it's 18. Well, you have to have tough conversations because, well, what if they were at 18 and they got another 2? What is that? That's like 1.6% or 1.5% increase in revenue that they're going to see, but it is a 10% reduction in revenue for the agency. You know, we would have hard conversations with our clients about that when they're saying we're getting, you know, some proposals in at a better rate. You know, did you understand what that 2 or 3% means to an agency and how you can't offer the same services at that rate? So I think honest conversations are really key to this issue.
Okay, sounds good. Let's create it. You know, I've just started Mike's Collection Agency, and I've decided that my agency is too small, and I want it to be bigger. So, you know, part of the advice was networking and finding people. So I've got, you know, Nick Jarman and Harry Strasser, two of the, you know, the rock stars in the industry. Walk me through, you know, the first steps I should take, you know, in, toward getting, you know, toward growing. And Nick, I'll let you start.
I think the first step, and I know we're running a little bit short on time and have a lot of good material left too, I think so, is to really identify when you say that you're too small, identify what exactly does that mean? Do you not have enough clients? Is your revenue not where you want it? Is there not enough profit margin? Do you want more employees? And then once you identify why you feel that your agency is too small, then it's time to really internalize that and look at, okay, what is it that we're good at? What is our core competency that, you know, we can actually go out and we do a really good job at X? And once you figure out what X is, then it's time to determine what does the market look like? And then is that a local, state, regional, or national level? And then from that point, build on those connections, the established network, and going out after the clients, because if you don't go out there and put in the work, you're assured to not get any of the results.
Harry, what would your advice to me be?
See a psychiatrist. I talked a lot. You get companies that come to the programs we do, and they talk about, I want to grow. I want to, you know, grow. But they're not aware of what growth means. And I think Nick's right on. You know, what does growth mean to you? And it usually is about revenue. I mean, it comes down to, I want to make more money. You know, so how do we make more money? But when you want to make more money and you want to grow, then you've got, you know, staffing issues. So you've got your 20 people now, and boy, things just kind of roll nicely. Do you really want to have 50 people? You know, that not only does it take a lot more to manage 2.5 times the people, but then you fall into other rules and regs with HR, and when you go over 50 employees. And so I think, it, once again, we're back to that thoughtful type of process. You know, what is your motivation for wanting to grow? Now, we've already talked at the beginning of the program that it's tough to operate today as a little tiny company because of the mandates that are made at all companies. You know, when you hear about what's happening on the regulatory front, you hear about the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which is now the Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection. You know, we think, oh, these are just the really big mega companies. It ends up filtering down to all organizations. The expectation is the same. You know, you can't be haphazard with your data security because you're just a little company, because the risk is lower. That it just doesn't work that way. You've got to have the same types of issues. So I think it's an important conversation for people to understand, why do you want to get bigger? What's the motivation?
Because I want to be like Harry and Nick. That's my answer.
Yeah, not necessarily. Well, it comes down to it's what Nick said a while ago. It's about profit. That's the key. I mean, I have seen really profitable small companies where they're doing just great, they decide to grow, you know, grow, but bigger isn't always better. And they end up actually losing money and operationally not being able to perform. So it's a big question.
Nick was right when he said we've got some good topics left, but we're running out of time and there's some questions starting to come in. So if you do have a question that you'd like to ask either of them, I would recommend typing it in now and sending it in so we can get to it before we run out of time. And I want to skip ahead a couple of discussion topics and talk about something that I think is important relative to this discussion. And that's talking about company culture and identity. We've talked a little bit about adding staff and offices and acquiring, but every company that I talk to is focusing a lot of effort and resources on their culture and getting people to buy into their culture. So how do you make sure that you're maintaining that culture as you're growing? And Harry, I'd like you to weigh in first, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I think that the culture and how you project yourself and brand yourself is really very important. And you also have to be willing to change that perspective and change your brand. Probably one of the better examples that I can think of, we've talked about small companies, we've talked about average operators. At one point in time, most of our industry, we didn't have a lot of national and regional companies. Regional, when I say regional, I mean like multiple states. Most of them had a very small geographic area. It was around a metro area. It was three or four counties in Pennsylvania. You were the credit bureau of Somerset, Pennsylvania. And so many agencies have had names that are very geographically limiting. And so if you're going to grow, if you're going to move forward, you can't be the credit bureau of Somerset, Pennsylvania, and be getting contracts that are across the U.S. You've got to rebrand yourself. The culture in the company, general culture is one thing, how you operate, what your mindset is, what your principles are. But you have to realize that as you grow, you might say that we are the most responsive company in our marketplace. That responsiveness may diminish as you grow and you haven't accommodated the staffing needs. So I think brand and who you are is really important. I think it's also very much related to your physical surroundings. What does your office look like? I've had some programs where we joke about this, where we say, do you have A, B, C, or D office space? And some of the stories that people share, one thing is the cultural perspective people have in just dealing with you, but what happens when somebody comes to visit you? A client comes into your door, what are you telling them by your physical surroundings? So I think it's important to maintain it. I think that we have to realize that there may be somewhat of a change in your attitude and your general company culture as you move forward and grow, so that you can be more encompassing of what's required of a larger agency.
Nick, what advice do you have in terms of sort of being able to maintain a culture or identity as as you seek to grow or as you actually are able to grow?
So unlike normal, I'll be concise and direct. I'll give you the five it's that I look at from the company culture standpoint. And I highlighted the question when you gave it, which is build it, live it, value it, reinforce it, and fight for it. And I think if you can constantly do those, and keep that going, you'll find the culture that you wanted.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Would you do me a favor, if you don't mind, partially because I didn't get a chance to get them all down, but repeat those, because I think that those are very good.
Yeah, build it, live it, value it, reinforce it, and fight for it.
Yeah. I like the fight for it, because sometimes you really need to do that.
And sometimes that's internally as well. You have internal struggles that are going against the culture, and you got to fight those forces.
Sure.
we've just got a couple of minutes left, and we've got a couple of questions that have come in. So let me get to those. Regarding agency acquisitions, especially acquiring smaller agencies, what purchase options are utilized? Lump sum, monthly payoff based on recoveries, combination of both, etc. And what is a good methodology to use to value an agency being considered for acquisition?
That's a good question. I'll just take that real quickly. I've been working a little bit in that space. One of the most common methods today is what is known as an earn out. So if you're acquiring an agency, you will pay them a percentage of the fees earned over a period of time, 2, 3, 4 years, depending on the size of the agency. What those percentages are all have to be negotiated. Basically, at the end of that time period, that earnout, you know, that agency would expect to have X amount in their pocket as owners. And so that's the most common. It can be a combination of give them a down payment and then a smaller earnout or a larger earnout with no down payment. So I think that's the most common practice there. And agency owners always have an inflated opinion about the value of their companies. I have not seen any of these earnouts, and not to say that there aren't any out there that are, you know, a multiple of what they're doing annually in sales. Is typically, you know, a percentage of annual revenue that they might be able to see over the period of 2 to 4 years. So, you know, I'm seeing $1 million companies selling for $500,000-$600,000 on the earnout is what I've been seeing.
Thank you. Next question. We recently purchased a small state agency. Previously, we have been in the subprime auto lending space with a built-in call center. What advice can you give to us to use to these core competencies, knowing we are way ahead in compliance today? Nick, do you want to tackle that one?
Can you just repeat that real quick again? I'm just trying to understand what they're asking.
We recently purchased a small agency. Previously, we have been in the subprime auto lending space with a built-in call center. What advice can you give us knowing that we are way ahead in compliance today?
Well, use that as leverage as you're continuing to look at what your offerings are. Without knowing this small agency, if that was more subprime auto or if it was another vertical, that would be important. But dependent upon either one, again, being different or what you're willing to invest in, making sure that you have as much leverage as you can and, you know, take the good that came with the agency that you purchased and then take the good of your existing agency, kind of merge those together. And then when you're looking at it from more of a profitability standpoint, it wasn't really asked, but, you know, what type of waste and redundancy can you get rid of? So that you can, you know, not only see a revenue increase, but you can see an expense decrease at the same time.
Well, we've reached the top of the hour, but I want to give each of our panelists who've already done an amazing job. I want to give them each one last chance to offer any sort of last words of wisdom or parting words to those of us who have listened for the last hour. And so with that, Nick, I'll give you the microphone.
Again, thanks, Mike and Harry and Todd and Boaz. I think that really the two things to close out with would be, you know, one, if you're not growing in some capacity, then you're dying. And it's more common than not in our industry that with existing clients or things of that nature, that something unexpected at some point in time will come up. Whether they're acquired, they change their outsourcing strategy, new management, whatever that may be, something that you're not expecting may be there. So prepare for the unexpected. And then when it comes to growing your agency, try to seek out the wisdom of others. I mean, there's nothing better than having somebody that has gone through the process and succeeded, failed, you know, rinse and repeat of going through this. So if you can find somebody and they're out there, that has the wisdom to help you through the process. It's so much better than trying to reinvent the wheel yourself.
Well said, thanks. Harry,
Well, likewise, thanks so much for the opportunity today, Mike, and great presenting with you, Nick, and thank you, VOAPS, for your sponsorship today. I'd like to maybe just to focus on one issue that Nick just mentioned about sharing ideas and networking with people, a very common concept in our industry, very valuable, is the concept of benchmarking. You know, get out, whether it be networking on your unit level, formally get a group of companies together and share your ideas. Very valuable, I've had a benchmark group for 10 years, and it is incredible how that group of people can help you make decisions for your own company. Bottom line, I think that we're at a time of opportunity. I know that we've been a troubled industry. It's been a tough industry, but there is great amounts of opportunity. And whether you're the little company that wants to sell, there's an opportunity to do so. And if you want to grow, there's an opportunity to do that. So it's all about opportunity.
Excellent. Thank you. Before I let everybody go, I want to thank Nick and Harry one more time for their input. I'm sure you can't hear it because everybody's on mute, but you're getting a round of applause from all the attendees, everyone who's been listening in. This webinar definitely would not have been possible without your participation. Also want to thank VOAPS for sponsoring today's webinar. You can find out more about the company by going to www.voapps.com or calling 855-737-1596. Thanks to everybody who registered and listened today and who asked questions. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the very near future. And I hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you very much.